Aisha, and I'm a former host of Mocha Single Mothers by Choice, or SMCs. Like you, as an SMC, I decided to become a mother knowing I'd be the sole care provider and parent for my children, at least at the outset. The Mocha stood for Black, so I'm using the word Black, and I'll be discussing being a single mother by choice from a Black woman's lens. You'll connect with all the interesting and fun things about this non-traditional path, like discussing which sperm to use and some hard truths about fertility and the realities of dating as a single mother who doesn't have a co-parent to rely on occasionally, and what it's actually like to parent as an S&C. This is the Black Single Mothers by Choice podcast.
We're here today with a topic that's especially timely for many SMCs with school-age children, because entering school for many of us takes us from the frying pan into the fire. We have academic schedules to deal with. We've got standardized tests. We've got activities, social dynamics, and then we also have current events all colliding around our kids. I know I'm feeling the burn. Things get real, really quick. So we've turned to the seasoned folks in our group, parents of tweens, to hopefully tell us that this too shall pass, or give us a little bit of insight as to what we need to prepare for. So our topic today is parenting tweens. We've invited Jennifer, Joy, and Yana here to join us to share their experience and their sage advice. So please introduce yourselves.
I'm Jennifer. I am 54. I live in Houston with my 12 and a half year old seventh grader, and he was conceived via home insemination with a known donor.
I'm Joy. I have an 11 year old who will be 12 very soon, in a few weeks. I am 50. I just had a birthday, 56.
Hey, congratulations.
Happy birthday. Thank you. And my child is neurodiverse, and I think that's an important part to add to this conversation because it does change schooling and friends and all sorts of
things. Hi, I'm Yana, and I have two children. My youngest child is actually my SMC baby. He was donor conceived with my oldest child, who we're here to talk about. She's from a previous relationship, but her dad is not in the picture. So I've parented her solo her entire life. She's 12, going to be 13 in 2 weeks. So she's almost teen. And so I have IUI with donor sperm is how I had my son, and my daughter is previous relationship.
Great. Thanks for those introductions. Okay. So we are in a large space with a bunch of Black single mothers by choice. And folks, as they deliver their kids or they welcome their kids and they go back to, they're anticipating going back to work for maternity leave. And some of the angst that they have is that they wish that they could stay home a little bit longer. And so we'll hear this hemming and hawing. And then the seasoned moms will sometimes chime in low key and say, at the time that you're returning to work, those little people don't really need you as much as when they are older and they're wrestling with trying to handle their different emotions, their different feelings, and all of the different social dynamics. Can we talk about that just a little bit?
Son enjoys a lot of alone time. He has his own activities. He only talks to me when there's no one else around, but he has a pretty busy social life, whether it's playing games. He has a VR headset. He plays games with friends because he's been to different schools. He has friends who are local and who live further away. He's also able to stay home a little bit, which is nice for me to be able to run to the grocery store without having to take him with me. Yet I call him and tell him to come to the garage and help me unload groceries. So there's some benefit to it.
Oh, that sounds amazing. Be able to go out to the grocery store.
I know. What age is that again, Joy?
That is so true, because I do the exact same thing. As I pull back into the garage, I'm, Tate, as soon as you hear the garage door open, come downstairs and help me get the groceries out of the car. I remember years ago when I was working with another friend, his wife is a pediatrician. When her husband and I worked together, we're both pediatric dentists. We worked together for about 10 years. And when their son was about 12, Kara, who was only working 2 to 3 days a week, she quit work altogether. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I can't imagine why you would quit work. And they just said that their son just needed her to be home. And you just don't quite get that until I think that you're in it, where, yeah, definitely my son is much more independent and he can do his own thing and he has his own friends. But there's a lot of emotional duress and stress at this time. And if you fostered, I feel, and I can't say that I fostered a great relationship, but as they age and mature and you foster that relationship, you want them to be able to come to you with all of the drama and all of the heartache and the angst and the good times and the bad times. When you're working and you don't get home till 6 o'clock and your son has baseball at 7:30. I mean, it's a race when I get home on Monday and Wednesday. I get home at 5:45. We have to leave at 6:30 to drive 30 minutes to baseball. And then he's in baseball for 2 hours. And there's really no time to reconnect at the end of his day. And so I wish that I had that time back to reconnect with him and to hear how his day went and to understand how he's feeling when XYZ is being mean. So I can see why Kara quit, because as her son was struggling with whether it was schoolwork or social issues, there is that need, I think, to reconnect with their parent. So I don't work on Friday, so I can pick him up. I pick him up from school. I make him do homework in the kitchen so I can see him. My babysitter can see him. Things that encourage us to reconnect while I'm cooking dinner. So that's where I come at the whole, yeah, it's great when your baby is 6 months old to be home with it, but anyone can give your baby a bottle, but not everyone can give my 12-year-old what he needs.
It's real dependent on the child, because my daughter, she tells me everything, like stuff to the point where sometimes my mommy heart is like, yeah, I could have dealt without not knowing that. And like, she tells me everything. She's doing everything her friends are doing. And she's like, are you going to tell so-and-so's mom? And if it's not something that's detrimental to the kid, I'm like, sometimes it's okay for you and your friends to have like things that you guys know that we don't know. And I'm like, it's trying to teach her where the limit is, where sometimes it's okay. It's not always okay. Like, it's a gray area, but you didn't really have to tell me that, but she just tells me everything. And I like that she tells me everything, right? But it's just, yeah, it's really kid dependent, but she wants me to know everything.
I will say, I know I am starting to feel a real burn right now with my 7-year-old. And if the emotional load of a tween is anything like with the 7-year-old, I think I'm going to be in for a lot of wine as my child ages, because right now she's the youngest in her class. And so she comes home with a lot of big emotions, and it's just, you know, easy to cry. She's a chatterbox. So she wants to tell me everything. We have this compressed time where we're in the car. And so I've started carving out time when I drive her to school to say, do you have any questions, any things that you want to ask? Because it's not just on the go time, and it can't be like, I'm looking you in the eye, let's have this intense conversation time. It really has to be intentional, but a low pressure type of environment that you set up. And that takes time, right? Because we're who we are. And I know sometimes I get triggered because of something she said, and then I trigger her. And it's just a cycle that I wish wouldn't happen. But if I had more space and more time, I feel like I could lean into that a little bit more and be more self-aware. All right, so let's get into this next, because we talk a lot about conception stories, adoption stories, and we, as SMCs, we're intentional about the stories and how we tell it and how we make space for the kids to process. I know the types and the details we share will change over time. How has your child's conception story or adoption story or your approach to their story, how has that changed as they've grown and gotten older?
You mentioned adoption story. So my son was adopted at birth. In fact, I cut the umbilical cord. and did induce lactation. So he has been with me from the very beginning. And he's always known that he was adopted. And there were times he would get angry when he was a toddler and he would tell me he liked it better in his birth mother's stomach than being with me.
He knew exactly what buttons to push.
Mm-hmm. He did. And I just didn't respond to those sorts of things. And I will say now, sometimes he'll say things like, I almost forgot that you didn't have me or something like that. And he makes it more intentional. He asks questions about her. We have an open adoption and I've always told him anytime he wants. Once he said, can I talk to her? And I said, let me text and find out. And I said, she said, sure. And he said, okay, maybe some other time. And he's never been interested again.
So he may have just wanted to know if she was open to talking, not that he
wanted to talk. And he's said several times, he's got a lot more friends now who are divorced and going back and forth between parents. And he said, I don't have a dad, but at least I don't have to do that. So he's weighing at this point what his family life is like compared to his married friends and his friends who have divorced parents. So that's been in the last year or so, he's really paid attention, more attention to family structure and not wondered why ours is, but instead celebrate the family he has.
My daughter's view on it is a little different because she had a father, but she knows who he is, story. And she learned his because she was 8 when he was born. And she knew I was going to use a donor, but I don't know if she all the way understood the concept. And then I didn't tell her I was pregnant with him until after I was out the first trimester. She was happy that he was coming and she didn't really mention a donor anymore after that, but we know donor siblings. And so she knows they share the same donor as her brother. She calls them her siblings too. That's my brother and sister too. And that's her view of it. And that's his view of it. And nobody tells her different. And she said, I could share, because I did ask her, could I share this? She wishes that she was donor conceived as well. Because she said it's better for kids to be donor conceived than to have a dad like mine who doesn't want to be here. Like, who knows I'm here, knows I exist, and he's chosen not to be here. At almost 13, like, that's her point of view, that her brother is better off than she is.
Yana, I have a question because I have two conception stories to share with my children. How are you navigating the two conception stories? So you said that your daughter wishes that she had a donor as well. How are you navigating those two stories to give them both the respect that their situations entail?
She understands that all dads aren't like her dad. And like, there are family dynamics where the dads are good dads and are good people and are involved. And her dad is not the standard of fathers. And from my son's perspective, he's met her dad before and he just called her sister's dad. And that was it. Like, he doesn't think anything of it. It's just like meeting someone else. If I said, oh, this is Miss Aisha. Oh, that's Miss Aisha. And that's what his label is. And he hasn't really totally grasped this. I don't think he understands that her having a dad and him having a donor is different yet. And she understands it. I'm going to keep on trying to foster in a way. And I try to make sure she has good role models. Like, she's really close with my dad and he's really close with my dad. And I push that relationship. You have Pop and Pop does this and Pop does that for the both of them. But the way it's going is because of the way her father is. They both were like, conceived is the way to go. And this is awesome. And that's where they are with it because just of her situation. They love my dad, but they don't really all the way have anything else to compare it to as far as living in the home.
How does this change when they become tweens? Things like handling the phone, social media, and all of the other influences in their life, because they're not just sequestered to the playground anymore.
So Tate does not have a phone. I am full on board with the, and I think I've mentioned that before on the Facebook page, that I am a firm proponent of wait until 8. So my feeling has always been there's no place that my 12-year-old needs to be or my 11-year-old needs to be where there's not an adult. We don't live in a situation where we live in the city and he goes to private school. So there is no going out with riding his bike down to his friend's house because we don't have that because of where we live and because of the school environment that he's in. So there's no place that he needs to be that there shouldn't be an adult that has a phone. So there is no phone. So he does have an iPad, but with strict rules. There's no screen time during the week. I've lessened up on that a little bit. I do let him text with his friends on the iPad, but there's no TikTok. There's no YouTube during the week. We don't do TikTok anyway, but that's how I've done it. There's just no use. And I don't use my phone during dinner. I really try really hard when I come home, unless I'm on call, I don't use my phone until he goes to bed. That I was really good about that when he was really young. There was I didn't use my phone unless I got paged by the office. I wasn't on it. I used that as a model. Like when I was growing up, if the phone rang during dinner, you didn't get the phone.
Jennifer, I know your son is in a lot of sports, right? Y'all do a lot of stuff. How do you juggle that with your job, with school, with his activities? How do you juggle that and not feel overwhelmed, or do you feel overwhelmed?
I have a sitter. So I've had this sitter since he was in kindergarten. I chose to do that because I didn't want him to have such a long day. I felt like at 3 o'clock he needed to come home and relax. I felt like it was different from daycare. So I've always had a sitter. So all of my sitters, when he was young and he had sports, they were always after school. And so they just picked him up from school, from the sporting activities. Now it is overwhelming. It's a lot of work. I just have to be organized. I just have to know where he has to be, when he has to be. And then you have your weekends open. When I know we have a tournament, I don't make plans. I don't go out a lot because it's just so busy. So you just have to be organized. And I have help with my babysitter. She's awesome.
Joy, how does this change? You said that your son is neurodiverse. So what are his activities like? How do you juggle his activities with your schedule?
Right. So he is on the autism spectrum. It would be called Asperger if they still had that diagnosis. So most people can't even tell that the stereotypical stuff about not being able to look someone in the eyes or not being able to figure out jokes. He doesn't have any of that. So it's more about sensory issues. If it gets too loud, he likes to stick to a schedule, those sorts of things. In fact, I didn't even know it was an issue until he started school. It started in kindergarten. And so I find school, I always say that Dr. Spock book ends at 5 for a reason, because when you start mixing teachers in it, you just can't control anything. You can't control what influences they have. He was coming home saying things about screaming like a girl or blah. And I had to get those sorts of things out of him because he didn't have those kinds of exposures at home. And so it manifested itself in the classroom where there was a lot of chaos and several students in a class. So that was one of the first things I had. Being overwhelmed has to do with schools and navigating how they look at a Black boy with a single mother in a predominantly white area, and everything seems to be about behavior and not about his actual disability. So I've been having to do a lot of educating and a lot of advocating for him, and he is now in the 6th grade. Yeah, so that's been one of my challenges. But I also wanted to go back to what Jennifer said, because we live in an urban area where my son takes the bus, he walks all over the neighborhood, he rides his bike all over the neighborhood. Our group of kids at Halloween decided that they wanted to spend 30 minutes trick-or-treating without their parents, which was the first time for him. And there were two kids older, and I was terrified. And at one point he called me and told me he was at the Arctic Circle, which is like a Dairy Queen or something, and that they were all getting courtesy cones. And I was like, oh Lord, they're going to get kicked out. But they each got their free little ice cream cone and left and kept trick-or-treating. And I just kept thinking, he's just growing up. He's independent, and parents stayed in touch with each other throughout this. But we live in one of those kind of neighborhoods. It's very old school with porches on the front and everybody's constantly walking. And so he has a good amount of independence, I'd say. And it took me a long time to get there, but he would say, so-and-so who's younger than me gets to do blah, blah, blah. So he rides his bike to school when the weather is good, and school is about a mile and a half away. Mm. And I rode with him the first few days of school to make sure he knew all of the hand signals and he only has to make 2 turns. But yeah, that was really hard too. But he does. He rides his bike, and when the weather's bad, he takes the bus. He has a phone too. I was not thrilled about his getting a phone, but I happened to get a free iPhone 12 mini because I got an iPhone 12. And I still to this day am not sure that I'm okay with it, but it does make me, or it had made me feel better that he had a phone since he was taking the bus. But when he didn't come home one day and I kept trying to call him and couldn't get him, I was terrified. I didn't know where he was or what he had done. Turned out he got upset with me and blocked me on his phone.
Oh, no. See, that, I am not
like, that is the whole purpose of your having a, if that ever happens again, you will not see this phone until you can buy one yourself. But yes, he had blocked me and that's why I couldn't reach him. And it turned out he was on his phone, not paying attention, missed his stop, and then was trying to sort out how to get back home, but he didn't want to call and tell me that he missed it. So I was a wreck. And so I was out driving around, tracing the bus stop, tracing his walk stop. And he called and said, I'm home. Where are you? And I'm like, I'm out looking for you. So we had a long talk about that, but I think that was one of the most terrifying things for me. And he couldn't describe where he was when he got off the bus, but he managed to find his way home, but it was terrifying.
Oh, I was going to say, as you, you're always, you don't want your baby to do this. You don't want your kid to do that. I tell you at 12 and a half, I am, you think you don't want your kid to drive. I cannot wait to drive. I'm thinking, okay, we're 12 and a half. That means we have 3.5 more years. Can I get my car back from my brother-in-law? Because if, yeah, I as horrified. So it's all those things that you think you're so scared for your kid to take this step and that step. And then you understand why the 16-year-old is driving himself to baseball, is driving herself to softball. It's because then I don't have to do it.
Oh, totally.
As much as I don't want him to, I look forward to that freedom for him. I'll be horrified because he'll be getting on the freeway.
Yeah, but it's like a new layer of independence. Like we all like hope for that day that our toddler and our little kid can like reach the cereal because like when we can sleep. And then the next stage, wait a second, driving would be so great.
Okay, so let's talk about puberty. Like puberty freaks me out and I suspect that y'all are right in the midst of puberty. So how did you handle those conversations? How did you deal with that stage of the hormonal ups and downs? What advice do you have to give?
I went in early and I actually talked to my daughter about it early just because I ended up developing early as a young girl. My period came early and I was like, I want her to know what a period is before period comes. I don't want her to wake up and freak out one morning. So I talked to her when she was like 8 about it. And I was telling her, and this could happen and that could happen. And this is happening. This is why. And your hormones are this. And fortunately, it didn't come on for her at 8. So when she finally did get her period, she was prepared. Because I talked to her about it at 8, it didn't come till she was 12, but it's, she knew already.
I should have already started having this conversation and I'm late.
Because it's, I just didn't want her to freak out and be like, I am bleeding to death.
That's good advice. My kid's 8 and she doesn't seem like she's developing, but I you never know, like she could have it soon and I'd be caught off guard.
Mm-hmm. At this stage, they talk about it at school. They talk about so much at school. Mm-hmm. My daughter comes home and she schools me and I'm just freaking out. Somebody was trying to buy a Tesla. And apparently Tesla, people who have Teslas have money. This is the education that they're getting on the playground or in school. So I definitely would want to preempt that conversation. Does it change? Yana has a daughter. What's your experience like prepubescent for boys or people with penises?
Tate is very, he's not the least bit interested. He knows now where, you know, where babies come from and how you have a baby, and he understands, you know, sperm and egg to a great extent. So he's very fine with it. He doesn't seem concerned. We've not had issues, but we really, he doesn't ask a lot of questions. He's never been that. People always tell me their daughter asked them this at 3 and their son asked them this at 4 about penises and where do babies. Tate's never been interested in pregnancy, any of that. He has never, he is a take it as it is kid.
Mine is the complete opposite. He was touching himself very early on and asking me what some of his body parts were. And I learned early to just answer the question and stop, and not because if you talk too much, they get bored. And we always talked about anatomical parts and things like that. And the daycare would sometimes call me and say, this is perfectly normal. Like when he was 4, it was like preschool. He was potty trained early, but they were still doing community bathrooms because some of the kids at 2.5 were still being, and he was like, is that a vagina? So they moved him up to the class where there were private bathrooms.
We're like, oh, he knows things.
So he's always been really precocious. And I answer honestly and try to tell him as little as possible until he asks about more. Sometimes he jumps to conclusions that are inaccurate, and then I have to correct him about those things. I thought, oh, I'm having a boy. I don't have to worry about birth control. And then I thought, wait a minute. Yes, I do. He needs to know all the things that a parent of a girl would need to know. And it's important for him. He knows about consent. I've had to buy lots of books on this stuff with drawings about kids' bodies and what it looks like. I have a couple of really great books about how a child's body matures with pubic hair and that sort of stuff. And that's been, I think, really helpful. And he's asked me a couple of questions where I was like, where'd you hear this? And once he said, my friend asked me what it meant. And I told him I didn't know. I'd ask my mom and get back with him.
And I love it.
I'm just glad he's asking.
I know, the parent friend. They're now your peers in terms of influence.
Oh, goodness. So thank you so much for this conversation. Y'all were a wealth of information. We can't wait to have you back on the podcast. And to our listeners, forewarned is forearmed. So good luck. Until next time. Full Pod, thank you so much for taking the time to listen. If you like what you've heard, please share this podcast with your girlfriends, and I'd love to hear your thoughts about the topics covered in this episode. So email me at mochasmc@gmail.com. If you found value in the topics covered, consider making a donation using the link in the show notes below. Till next time, Pod. Bye now.